Last time we left off on the top of Mount Zion Mouth, and I want to go back over one thing, because Sam asked me a question I think is relevant in clarifying a question we sort of left open the last time. And I said, and I think it's not correct, or I raised the possibility, when the Gemara wanted to know what was the din by Shinui, right? If you have something that would be Nifsal Lehekdesh, but not Lehedyot, in other words, Ravea Behema, your Mishtachave Lechitim, which are attached to the ground, so they're not Nesar Lehedyot, but let's assume for the moment that if you bow to the Chitim, you're not allowed to use the Chitim like Avoa. But if you change the Chitim, you grind them up, so now they're flour, it's a Shinui, that was the question the Gemara had. It was one of, I thought, Rami Bar Chama's questions, which is that what is the din of Shinui? What is the din of Shinui? So the Gemara had tried to resolve this question by pointing to a case of Rovea, where someone was Rovea Behema, and the Gemara ends up settling. The case is where it's a pregnant Behema, and someone is Rovea that Behema. So the Behema is not Asura Lahedyot, but it's Asura Lagavawa. What about the Ubar? So the answer, the conclusion of the Gemara is everybody agrees, both Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim agree, the Ubar cannot be used as a sacrifice. The question is, but the Ubar has a Shinui. The Ubar, it was originally an Ubar, now it's a Vlad, it's a living animal. So the Gemara's answer, why that was not proof, is that there's no Shinui there. By wheat, there's a Shinui. You take wheat, you grind it up, flour, it's totally different. There, it was a Behema before, it's a Behema now. But the door is Achida Bifana'a. It's Achuz, it's closed off before. It just can't get out from the door. And when the mother gives birth, the door opens, the Behema comes out. So I suggest that at the end, it sounds a little bit like an Ubar already has an independent, is already a Behema. Which has potential relevance, let's say, for the discussion of abortion, whether or not the fetus is considered a living being already. So, based upon something that Sam said to me, it occurred to me, though, that you really can't draw that conclusion, because I believe that the assumption of the sugya here is the only reason why why is the Vlad Neseris? You weren't Rovea, the person wasn't Rovea the Vlad, he was Rovea the mother. So the answer is the reason why the Vlad is Asur, because if a person is Rovea the mother, we don't say that it's only the intestines that are prohibited. We say every limb of the mother is prohibited. He's Rovea the Behema, that's done in a certain way, but the legs are prohibited, and the arms are prohibited, and the tongue is prohibited, and everything else is prohibited. So why is it that if you have an Uber there, why do we say the Uber is prohibited? So the Pashtus is, that's because Uber Yerachima. It is a limb of the mother. So in effect, all the Gemara may be saying in the end is that, yes, it's a limb of the mother. It is a limb of the mother, otherwise it might not become a Asur, because Sam's question was, what if you have a Siamese animal and you're Rovea 1, what's the din of the other half the animal? So the answer to the question, I think, is it depends whether halachically it's considered one animal or two animals. If it's one animal, then every limb of the animal is prohibited. If it's two animals, they just happen to be attached at the hip. So very likely that you would say that one is considered a nirbas and one is not considered a nirbas. So the same issue should be probably true here as well. So then when the Gemara says that there's no shinui, it's just that delas is achuz b'faneha, doesn't mean that it had the halachic status of behema before. It just means if you were to look at the fetus right before it's born, right after it's born, it's the same thing. Right? It doesn't really change, so for the purposes of Shinui, you might say it's metaphysical. This might be relevant.
Would it matter also how far into the process it was?
Well, let's work with the assumption.
The
Gemara.
You just gave us a much better answer, right? Because it doesn't make a difference where it is in the process, if it's actually a limb of the.
Oh, no, I agree. That's from the perspective of becoming Neseris. The question is from the perspective, I think you're asking a different question. Would somebody, in other words, the Gemara's answer is that it's a behema before, a behema after, it's just that there's a door closed in front of it. Let's say the fetus weren't fully formed yet.
Right.
Would the Gemara, in other words, is the Gemara suggesting, according to the Gemara's teretz, it might be that behema is not Neseris because there really is a shinui. In other words, a whatever the 9 months is for a behema, whatever that is for a behema, a 9 month behema vlad, yeah, you could just open the door and take the behema out. It's the same, looks exactly the same. But a half-formed behema, it may be, according to Gemara's answer, that in fact does constitute a shinui.
I would think it does, because you can chef the real animal, you can't chef the half an animal.
Right, the question will still remain. It could be that it doesn't matter, because shinui may not matter. In other words, for sure, listen, the earlier you go, the more it's clear that the ubar is neseris. The question is whether the ubar changes, and if that matters. Okay, so anyway, fine. So that's the previous Gemara. Now the Gemara has, I would say, I don't want to say a little more halacha lemaisa question, but the following. It's on the, I think, Eighth line of the Gemara. Boi Reish Lakish. The MRM had a lot of questions in the sugya. Boi Reish Lakish. Hamishtacha bela dekel. If a person bows down to a palm tree. Lulavo mahu lemitzvah. Are you allowed to use the lulav? Are you allowed to use the lulav for the mitzvah? I'm sorry, we're on Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. I apologize. Are you allowed to use the lulav for a mitzvah? Now, before we even read on in the Gemara, let's test what we remember from the, earlier in the sugya. If I bow down, if someone bows down to a palm tree, are you allowed, there are two questions to be addressed here, but first, are you allowed to get benefits from that palm tree? So based upon what we saw previously, it depends how this palm tree came into being, and it depends whose opinion you're following. Right? The Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda believes that if a person, let's say, following Rashi's position, planted the tree, even though they didn't plant the tree for the purposes of Avodah Zarah, but because it has Tfisa Seara Adam, so Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says that if you bow to the Dekel, the entire Dekel, the entire palm tree becomes Asur B'Hanah. Now, we have to talk about what does that mean for the mitzvah. Let's hold off on what, for that for a moment. Then, but if you hold like the Chacham, now as opposed to for a palm tree, which existed in Mishesh Yisimei Breishis, to keep it simple, so then Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda would say that the Dekel is Mutar Lehedyot. Now, you could still ask the question, it might be Mutar Lehedyot, but do we treat a mitzvah similar to the way we treat Hekdesh? Like by Hekdesh, if you're Oveid a Behema, the Behema you're allowed to get Hana, Hedyot can get Hana from it, but it's most like a Voa, it's disgusting. How are you going to bring this thing that was worshipped to, as a carbon? So maybe the same thing would hold true for mitzvah, maybe not. Mitzvah is not exactly the same thing as Hekdesh. As a general rule, mitzvos do not have kedusha, right? Only things that have specific kedusha as an object are treated with a certain kind of sanctity. So if you have tefillin, or you have a sefer Torah, you have a mezuzah, you have shem Hashem, and that's the criteria. The Gemara actually, Megillah, talks about what we call tashmishe mitzvah and tashmishe kedusha. Tashmishe kedusha are all those things that have shem Hashem somewhere in them, on them or in them. Tashmishe mitzvah are things that don't, like tzitzis, like a lulav. Once you're done with those mitzvahs and you're not using them anymore, so those do not actually have kedusha. Some people try to love them, they don't, but some people put their tzitzis in shemus. Balpi, then you don't need to, you should just dispose of it in a bakavadik away just because you shouldn't be mevazit. But tzitzis has no kedusha. But tefillin, when they're worn out, or tefillin straps, which are tashmishe kedusha also, have to be put in shemus. So the question is, so is a mitzvah, like lulav, have the same status as hektesh? That something might be asur mutar lehedyo, but asur lagavoa and asur lemitzvah. So if you hold like the, that's if you hold like Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda. If you hold like the Chachamim, you can come up with a case where someone, let's say, planted a tree. And if once a person plants the tree and it takes root, according to the Chachamim, so it's not Nesar Lehedyot if someone bows to it, but so the question is the same question.
For Rashi, it's a seed, right?
What's that? For Rashi, Rawashi would say when it's a seed, that's a machlokes. When it's a branch, a shoot, everybody agrees it becomes usher when you worship it. And Tosaf says the other way. Tosaf says, if you plant it as a seed, everybody agrees. It's a new thing, it's no Tfisas Yada Adam, nobody can make it usher. It's only if you plant a shoot or a branch, then it's a machlokas Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. So the question is, firstly, are we dealing, let's assume, what we have to come up with a scenario where it's not Asur B'Hana on the one hand. On the other hand, let's say it is Asur B'Hana. Let's say, to make it simple, you plant a tree, let's say you plant a tree to worship it eventually. And then, you want to take a lulav from the tree, a branch from the tree, and use it as a lulav. Now, what's the question? Presumably it should be usher. So the answer is it's not so clear. Why is it not so clear? So the Gemara has a principle that mitzvah lav lehanos nitnu. That a mitzvah is not, constitute hana. Now, you have to be careful what that means. If I have something, let's say that's matzah, I have matzah that's made from, I don't know, kilaya kerem, wheat that should have been labeled kilaya kerem, it's asur b'hanah. So we don't say that it's mutter to eat that matzah on Lal Pesach, because mitzvos lav lehanos nitnu. Mitzvos lav lehanos nitnu means that the kiyum ha-mitzvah, the fulfillment of a mitzvah itself, does not constitute hana. So if you pick up a lulav and you shake it, most people, you don't get any physical pleasure, any physical hana from the object. The only benefit you get is that you will mekayim the mitzvah of lulav. So that, we assume, does not constitute a hana. But if you're eating matzah, or if you're sitting in a sukkah, and it's very sunny out, and you're under schach, which is, you know, from an asherah tree, so you are getting hana from Avodah Zarah. The fact that the kiyum ha-mitzvah, that fulfilling mitzvah sukkah, doesn't constitute hana, doesn't mean you're not actually getting hana. So this is a case, however, that the lulav is a case where there's no hana in the mitzvah itself. The only hana is the kiyum ha-mitzvah. So the Gemara in Sukkah, Tosus points out, says that there is, I believe, a machlokes, but Rava presents an opinion there that if you take the lulav of Avodah Zarah and you wave it and use it, you mekayim the mitzvah, because mitzvah lav lehanos nitnu. Now, if that's the case, either the Gemara here is rejecting Rava's opinion, or the Gemara here is asking a different question, which is, yes, we know that you're yotzei with it, but are you allowed to do that lechatchila? Lechatchila, are you allowed to take such an object, which is aser b'hana, are you allowed, in fact, lechatchila, to take such an object? That's how Reish Lakish originally presents the question. Now the Gemara comes along and says the
following. So what's the problem with what? That's most.
What's that being most? Yeah. So now the Gemara says, "Be'ilan shenitol mitchila lakach." If the tree was originally planted for avodah zarah, lo tibaylach da'afilu lehedyot nami yaser. The Gemara says even a hedyot's not allowed to get benefit from it. So again, that might only be lachatchila. However, ki tibaylach be'ilan shenitol lebesof avado, a tree that you planted and then you worshipped. The same thing is true, that for Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Huda, if a person planted the tree, it's also asur hana when it's subsequently worshipped. What's the din with respect to mitzvah? Is it considered ma'os la gavoa? In effect, is a mitzvah being treated the same way as something which has kedusha? So there, the Gemara presented the question. However, ki asa ravdimi amar ba'ashera shebitla kami boile. He understands the question differently. It's not by a case where the lulav is not neser b'hana at all, but rather it's a case where the lulav, the deka was neser.
So either, what's going on here? Why are we introducing a new case now? What's going on here?
So my assumption is that Rishon didn't actually address this question. Nobody talks about why Ravdimi is not satisfied to leave the question as is. The answer might be, I could think of one of two possibilities. Maybe the simplest possibility is if Ravdimi is working with Rava's assumption that an Ilan that you worship, that you yotze with if you use the lulav, even though lechatchila maybe you shouldn't, then in a situation where it's not usher at all, when it's not Nesar Lehedyot at all, because it was either a tree that was there from Sheshis Rebracious, or Nita'o, or Lebesof Avado, according to the Chachamim, then perhaps Radimi thought it was inconceivable. If the tree never becomes an Avodah Zarah, it's hard to imagine anybody would say you can't use it as a Lulav Lechatchila. It's clear b'di'evit it works. For sure it works. It would work b'di'evit even if it were Aser Bana. It's not Aser Bana, you're going to tell me, and it never was an Aser Bana, you're going to tell me that it's a Mutal Lechatchila. Now, I'll tell you why I think that, because let's look at how Rav Dimi formulates the question. Ki Aser Rav Dimi Amar Ba'asherah Shebitla Kami Ba'adle. It's a case where the Asherah, where it was a tree that was Nesar Bana. It was Nesar Lehedyot. Again, for the Chachamim, if you planted it in order to worship it, for Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Huda, if you planted it and later you worshipped it, it becomes Aser Bana. But now, a guy comes along and is mevatel the Avodah Zarah, right? A guy worshipped it, a guy is mevatel the Avodah Zarah. It's no longer aser lehedyot. And the question is, kami boy le yesh dichoy etzo mitzvos o ein dichoy etzo mitzvos. So I want to explain this concept in a second.
How come we never asked the kind of a question of Asherah, it was Bitla, when it came to etzo gavoa? You know, whether it could be used etzo gavoa. How come all of a sudden we have made this case up for... by mitzvos, but not for gavoa.
No, I'll tell you why. Because by gavoa, even if something is not neser b'hana, it's no good la gavoa.
Because it's never.
It's never, right. It's not aser b'hana. But it's still not acceptable la gavoa. But the question is here, this is essentially the question, and so they,
still maybe becomes not nevet anymore if it's bitla. No?
Correct. So that, in other words, the assumption of Rav Dimi was that if it was never Osir Bana, it's not going to be prohibited legabe mitzvah. But maybe something that was Neser Bana, so it's worse than a regular Nevad by Hekdesh. It's worse than that, but now the Goy was Mevatalit, so here you have a question, whether or not something once it was Nesar, Lehedyot, and now it's only Mutter because the Goy was Mevatalit, so maybe it would be Mutter, but he formulates the question the following way. He's moved away a little bit from Nesar and says, is there Dichoy Etzel Mitzvahs or Ein Dichoy Etzel Mitzvahs? Now there is a concept of Dichoy by Hekdesh. If you sacrifice an animal, and if you makdish an animal, and something happens in the interim that makes that animal unusable, fundamentally unusable to Hekdesh, and later maybe it becomes usable again. So I don't remember if it's a machlokas, but certainly there's an opinion that says that once it was nidcha from being usable for Hekdesh, it doesn't matter if it gets fixed later. And there's one exception to the rule. The Gemara talks about if an animal gets a temporary mum and then the mum heals. But as a general rule, there's certainly an opinion that says that there's dichoy legabe hektesh. There's a question the Gemara has, what happens if it was never suitable when you amak the ship, but only later becomes suitable? And that's a little bit better. I think that's a little bit better because there, it wasn't like it was hektesh and then it was disqualified. It wasn't yet qualified when you amak the ship, but now all of a sudden it is improved. I don't remember. The Gemara distinguishes between the two. I think that's the way it's worse. I think it's worse if it was originally good and then was nidcha and then chazar v'nira is the expression, but I maybe have it backwards. So the Gemara here wants to know legabe mitzvos. Yesh dichoy eitzel mitzvos. So as I have an object that was suitable for mitzvah and now it's no longer suitable for mitzvah, it's nifsal, and now it comes back to life. Something has changed again. Do we say that once it's nidcha, once it's no longer usable, it's been pushed aside from being able to be usable for mitzvah, do we say that it's no longer valid? Or do we say, no, once it comes back to life, it comes back to life? In effect, the question is, yesh dichoy etzel mitzvos, is are mitzvos similar to hekdesh? Right? It's Reish Lakish's question and Rav Dimi's version, both are effectively asking whether mitzvos are treated the same way as hekdesh.
Is Rav Dimi's question relegated specifically to the realm of Avodah Zarah, or are there also conceivable scenarios where your mitzvah object would also...
So the Gemara is going to come up. It's not specific to Avodah Zarah, because the Gemara is going to want to suggest an analog to this particular question. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, Tivshot lemi d'tanan. Why don't you prove it from the following? The mitzvah kisur adam. What is the mitzvah kisur adam? Kisur adam is a mitzvah, it's the orphan of Parshas Achrimos. On Yom Kippur, we read the first chapter of Achrimos, we read the third chapter of Achrimos, the beginning and the end, but we leave out the middle chapter. That never gets to it. So almost nobody ever remembers the middle chapter, which contains the laws of one, Shchutei Chutz, of slaughtering an animal. If you shecht a hektesh animal outside the mikdash, you're chayiv kares. It also repeats the laws of eating dam, but it also has a din of kisui hadam. The law of kisui hadam is as follows. If you shecht an oaf, or a chaya, not a behema. So if you shecht the kosher bird, or if you and it's not a carbon, it's chulin. You shecht a kosher bird, or you shecht a kosher chaya, like a deer. So the halacha is that you have to do kisui adam. You have to cover the blood that comes out when and with the shechita. It's the mitzvah of kisui adam. Shafach estamo v'chisahu be'afar. It does not apply to behemos. It does not apply to a cow, a goat, or a sheep. In the shlacht houses, they do kisui adam. It's only done for the birds. They don't do it for the behemos.
And what kind of material has to be used as a covering?
Dirt or something like dirt. Okay. If you're interested in exploring it, the sixth perek of Maseches Chulin is perek kisui hadam, and it goes through. It's not a very long perek, and it goes through the various laws. So the Mishnah says the following: Kisahu v'nizgala patur melachasos. If you cover the blood appropriately, but then the wind somehow came up and picked up and blew your covering off, and now the blood is exposed again, you don't have to do kisui hadam. You did the mitzvah already; it's done. Kisahu haruach. If the wind covered it, you didn't cover it. The wind blew dirt on it. Then chayiv lachasos. You have to cover it now, which is a little difficult to do because it's covered already. So the Gemara now comments on that, quotes the Amoraic commentary in that Mishnah. This is all part of the proof. The Amar Rava Bar Chana Amar Yochanan Lo Shanu Ela Shechazar V'Nisgala Avo Lo Chazar V'Nisgala Pater Milchasas. You only have to do kisui after the wind covered it, the wind kept blowing, and then the wind blew the covering off. So now you're back to where you started. V'havinan ba. And when we learn that Mishnah and the statement of Rabba Bar Chana Amar Yochanan, we were mehaveh, we were analyzed, we engaged in understanding that particular din. Ki chazar ben iskala mehaveh. So what? Why should there be a mitzvah of covering it when it once again became uncovered? Hoel v'itche itche. The mitzvah was pushed aside because once the wind covered it, you lost your mitzvah. You can't do it anymore. So now that the possibility comes back to life, why should you be able to do it? The mitzvah should have been nidcha. And based upon that, after learning this whole sugya, putting the Mishnah, the Amoraic statement, and the question that they had, the Amar Rapapa zos ameres ein dichoi etzel mitzvahs. So the maskana of that sugya was, Rapapa concluded from the Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan's statement, and the question they had, that obviously, Megabe Mitzvos, there's no din of dichoy. If the mitzvah comes back to life, you can always do it. So by analog here, even though when the tree was used, when worshipped as Avodah Zarah and became Aser B'hana, you couldn't use the lulav, now that the mitzvah opportunity comes back because the guy was mevatel the Avodah Zarah status of the tree is mutabana, and you can use the mitzvah, you can use the lulav, why don't you say that ein dichoy etzel mitzvahs? That's what the Gemara suggests.
So the mitzvah is that a man should, ideally a man should cover it. You need a man to koach cover it.
A person should cover it, yes.
But if it's covered by the wind?
That's not, you haven't done the mitzvah. You lost your mitzvah.
Right, and now if it becomes uncovered.
So the question is, does the mitzvah come back to life or not? That's the question.
Because the mitzvah wasn't done, because the mitzvah hasn't been done.
The mitzvah was never done yet. Right? The wind is not a bar mitzvah. So no person who's mechuyev has covered the blood. So no, there's been no kiyama mitzvah. Now the blood is exposed again. So the question is, do you say that once the blood was covered up, it's too late, the mitzvah's gone, and it doesn't come back to life? Did you say that?
And now you want to say by Avodah Zarah, the Dekel.
They say that even though when they worshipped the Dekel, the lulav became, you couldn't use the lulav for the mitzvah, now that they were mevatel the tree, now you should, now maybe you should be able to use the lulav for the mitzvah.
Maybe it's still Moyes.
Well, as I pointed out, Rav Dimi rejected the Ma'us thesis. In other words, Rav Dimi thought that just because someone worships the tree, does not in itself make it Ma'us, right? He didn't understand Reish Lakish's question that way. Now the Gemara turns around, Rav Dimi is assuming, or the Gemara is assuming in Rav Dimi's presentation, that once the guy is mevatel the tree, it's no more Ma'us than it was before. But in the intermediate stage, it was unusable as a lulav. And the question is, do you say that the mitzvah comes back to life? Reish Lakish has formulated might disagree with Rav Dimi in the first place. Reish Lakish might say, even if you say that there's no dichoy legabe mitzvos, it's still mois. It's possible.
It's not a mitzvah. I mean, there's no mitzvah. You don't have to use this tree. It's not a mitzvah that you have to. The blood you have to cover. I mean, you may have to.
You're right. Except that the question is whether or not. Let's say you're in a place. We'll just play devil's advocate. You're on an island, and this is the only tree you have. The only tree you have. So the question is, and once you say if it's good then it's good in other circumstances. I presume in other circumstances. Given a choice, if you went into the Judaica store and they have piles of lulavim, and one pile is marked lulavim that were part of that Sherit tree that the guy was mevatel, and one box is lulavim tree, you know, mehudar mena mehudar badats in every certification, I presume,
exactly.
What's that? I was going to say, assuming they're the same price, I assume most people would rather not take the one that was from the Sherit tree. So, okay. So now the Gemara says, no. The Gemara says, no, it's not. I'll tell you why you can't draw why we're not sure. The Rapapa Gufe Iboile. We're not sure about Rapapa's statement. Rapapa said that you ain't dichoy etzel mitzvos, zos emeres de dichoy mitzvos. So the question is, mishat pshita le the Rapapa, de ain't dichoy etzel mitzvos? Was Rapapa sure that there was no dichoy etzel mitzvos? It doesn't make a difference whether it was a leniency or a stringency. Now remember, in Rapapa's case, it was a chumra. Because if you say, in other words, yesh dichoy etzel mitzvos, there's no need to cover the blood. Because the wind covered it once, now it uncovered too late. If you say, ein dichoy etzel mitzvos, then you have to cover the blood. So Rapapa, maybe, when he said, zos ameres, ein dichoy etzel mitzvos, maybe Rapapa was just being machmir and saying, you know what, maybe ein dicha it's a mitzvah, therefore you have to go cover the blood. Or maybe no, Rav Papa was saying, bein l'kula bein l'chumra, really it's a fact. Ein dicha it's a mitzvah. So that's what the Gemara says. Was Rav Papa mishat pshita le, the ein dicha it's a mitzvah, lo shna l'kula shal l'chumra, ol duma sapuke misapkale, maybe he wasn't sure, u l'chumra minan, l'kula no minan. So in that case, we say you have to cover the blood. But here we would say maybe yesh dicha it's a mitzvah, and you can't use it. And therefore, we're not sure whether Rapapa's was a definitive statement or not, and the Gemara leaves this with a teiku. The truth is, the pshat in Rapapa's statement, I think, is that it's Misha Pshitalei, because he says, Zos Omeres ein dicha etzo mitzvahs, right? He doesn't, he presents it as a foregone conclusion, not as, you know, that it's a chumrah, because maybe ein dicha etzo mitzvahs. Okay. Fine. Boy Rapapa. Hamishtacha vele behema. Samra mahu l'tcheles. Now, there are sort of a couple of things floating in the background here. The Gemara is going to ask, which is, firstly, what tcheles? Where is tcheles used?
Tzitzis.
It's used in tzitzis. Where else is tcheles used? The big day kahuna. Now, the big day. So now, what are the various factors that come into play here? Number one, so behema is nevad etzas lagavoa. But number one, the big day kahuna are not the carbon itself; they're just tashmishay carbon, which the Gemara never fully 100% resolved. Also, it undergoes shinui; it starts out as wool and then it's spun into thread. And I would say, not only that, but even dyeing wool constitutes a shinui. If you take tzemer utzvao, that constitutes a shinui. But generally speaking, a change that's irreversible constitutes a shinui. So once you turn the wool into thread, you can't turn the thread back into wool. And once you dye with a real dye, once you dye the wool, you can't undo it either. And that's one of the characteristics, I think, of the Murex trunculus dye, as opposed to Kala Ilan indigo, is that it's a much more binding dye. It's very hard to get out tcheles. Kala Ilan can be more easily washed out. So, what's that?
Permit.
Right. So... So the Gemara, of course, but if you think about it, we've kind of asked all these questions already. They've all sort of been asked by the Gemara. So that's why the Gemara says, "Tcheles demai, itcheles lekohanim, hainu bayid the Rabbi Bar Chama." Rabbi Bar Chama asked those questions already. Number one, on the top of Mevam Mebeis, are you allowed to use it for machshire carbon? Even though you can't use the behema for a carbon, can you use it for machshire carbon? Number two, on the bottom of the Mevam Beis, he wanted to know, is yeshinu benevad or not? If you take something that's neva, but you make a shinu to it, it's no longer the original animal. If you mishtachav et l'komas chitim, and now, so it's asr, the chitim are asr lagavoa, but now you grind up the chitim, you make flour out of it. So what are we asking? Whatever answer we gave to those questions, whether we did or didn't give the answer, we don't have any more information, so what are you asking here? What's the point in asking the question? If it's a question of tcheles for the purposes of tzitzis, hainu bayid the Reish Lakish. That's Reish Lakish's question, and this would appear to be the original Reish Lakish question, not Rav Dimi's modification. In other words, granted, assume for the moment that yesh nevad lagavoa for machshire karban, and assume that yesh shinu b'nevad. But this is not hektish. This is only a mitzvah. So that was Reish Lakish's question. Is the lula for mitzvah the same as the behema for hektish? So hainu bayid the Reish Lakish. So the Gemara says, enach anami, de lo haven lemin boyin lei. You really need to ask that question. It was part of a series of questions. We stopped you. We interrupted Rav Papa before he finished asking the question. And his question was the following. Tzamra ma'ul tcheles, that we know. Kraneha, can you use the animal's horns as trumpets? Hollow them out and use them as trumpets. Shokeha mahu lachalilim. Can you use its shok? The shok is the calf in the human being. It's the calf bone, whatever that's called. Tibia?
Calf is
tibia
and the fibula.
The two, but the tibia and the fibula?
Yeah.
Right. Can you use those bones as flutes? Can you make them into flutes? No, the shok is not the thigh. That's a very common mistranslation. The yerech is the thigh. The shok is the lower, right. The shok is the femur, and the yerech is the femur, and the shok is the tibial and the fibia. So, can you use those for flutes? Mea bnei meaho mahu lepeiros. Can you use the intestines? Rashi says for the neman shel kinar, the whatever kinar, so it's a harp or whatever kind of instrument. Can you use it for the strings? So what's the question here? So really, it would seem, what would you... Now, we're not talking about if you play in the Neshama Orchestra. It obviously means in the Beis HaMikdash. So what's the question? Isn't this addressed before? So the Gemara says the following. Aliba demanda amar ika shira bekli loti bailach, devade aser. So the Gemara is a machlokas. It's presented in Sukkah and Arachin, whether or not ika shira is bepeh or ika shira is bekli. Right? On the Karbanos, they used to do shira. They used to have musical instruments being played. And they also, including on Shabbos... No organ, probably. I don't think they had an organ, but they used to play the musical instruments even on Shabbos. The question is, what happens if your string snaps on Shabbos? What kind of a knot can the Ben Levi tie in order to fix it? The Mishnayos in the last parak in Erevin talk about that. But they had musical instruments and had Levium singing. So the question is, which was considered which is the mitzvah in Torah, and which is just an enhancement? So the Gemara says here as follows: Aliba the man damar ikar shira bekli lo tibalach tevada yaser. If you believe that ikar shira is bekli, that minat Torah, what is required are the musical instruments. So then, of course, it's also that. I mean, on the assumption that tashmishe karban are aser, so you couldn't use this nevad for instruments in the mikdash. Ki tibalach aliba the man damar ikar shira bepeh. If you hold that really the musical instruments are really not required, and you would say even without them, so the question is as follows: Basume kala ba'almahu, are the instruments there just to enhance the sound, or umaisinan, and you could use the parts of the animal for the instruments, odilma afilu hachayaser, or even so, as Rashi says, it's still mois, it's still disgusting, and therefore you're not allowed to use it. In other words, something that is not essential for the mitzvah, but is an enhancement to the mitzvah, is that disqualified by nevad as well? And the Gemara's answer to that question is, teku. Okay, we have one last question in this series. Boi Rabba, hamishtacha ve'lemayon, meimav mahu l'nisachem. If a person bows down to a spring... So what is the status of its waters for the Nesachim? We're only talking about basically somewhere between 2 and 7 days a year on Sukkos, when there used to be Menaseh Chamayim al Gabi HaMizbeach. There was no other time that water was used actually as a karban itself. So the question is, someone bowed to the spring. Now in principle, obviously the waters themselves are mutter. Why the waters mutter to get hanah from? Because it's karka, it's karka olam. It was mechuber le karka. It has to know tfisas yad ha'adam. And therefore, obviously, a head yod is allowed to drink the waters. But the question is, can you use them in the mikdash? So the Gemara says, my kami boile. What exactly is the question? Now, we're not asking the question of nevad b'mechubar. Because we're assuming that we've already asked that question, and we're assuming that nevad b'mechubar, we're assuming that nevad b'mechubar is aser. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a question here. And we're assuming that just like mishtachav al behema, even though the behema is not asura, you can't bring it as a carbon. So too, if you mishtachav to the tree, you can't bring that as a carbon either. Okay, now the nesachim themselves are gufam carbon. It's not machshir carbon. They are actually brought as a carbon on the mizbeach. So you don't have to deal. You don't have to worry about the second stage of that question. And there's no shinui, so you don't have to worry about Rami Bar Chama's question about the Baal Mevama. But you have to assume yesh nevad b'mechubar lagavoa, and therefore the question is: if a person bows to these waters, what is their din? So then, what was
collected?
What?
Can't just waters. He had to collect the water for the nesachim.
Well, someone. Oh, no. The question is: now you go and collect those waters. Okay. What will the din be?
But he bowed to the Mahayan. The water is always new.
Wait, let's hold on 1 second. So the Gemara, first the Gemara says as follows. My kami boile, what's the question? I lema I libavua kosagid o dema lamaya kosagid. Is the question whether or not he's bowing the bavua? I love Rashi. Rashi says, the day. A bavua is an echo or a reflection. So the question is, there are a lot of people who suffer this malady today. He's bowing to his own image, right? Il bavua di day parts of shalom. He looks in the water, sees himself. Okay, so there are a lot of people who engage in self-worship. So so the question is he worshiping himself? The Gemara wants to know, was the question, is he worshiping himself, or is he worshiping the water? If he's worshiping himself, if a person, I said many years ago, I'm not a very big fan of this, and for many years now in YU, it's not just in YU, but when they put up signs and for people coming, they post pictures. So in other words, when a Rebbe is giving a Sichas Musar, you have to have a picture of the Rebbe on the signs. People don't know who he is. And I thought it was a little bit, I think, I know where we're stemming from, and I think it had touches of megalomania involved in it. I was not a big fan, but I commented, Derech B'dichus, I said, I'm afraid, because if they put my picture up there, they're going to have to burn me now, because it says, P'silei Elohim Tisrafun Ba'esh. So anyway, there are such people, so they worship their own image. But we assume that if you worship a person, that the person is not Asar B'Hana. We assume, I think, even the person sets himself up as an Avodah Zarah, he's not Asar B'Hana either. He might be Chai Misa, but he's not Asar B'Hana. When he's dead, he's Asar B'Hana. That's a separate problem. Okay, so now the Gemara says that that's really the question. That's really just wanted to know, is what is he worshipping, himself or the water? So the Gemara says, V'tiboy le'sefel le'hejot. Why do you have to take a mayan with water in it, mechubad l'karka? Give me a cup of water, or a bowl of water where I can see my image in it, and I bow to the water. And the question is the water also the hedyot? That depends. If I'm worshiping the water, it's also the hedyot because it's already detached from the ground. If I'm worshiping myself, the water is not also the hedyot. So in other words, what the Gemara says, it doesn't make sense that the question should be, what is he worshiping? So now the Gemara says, no. V'hachi kami boilei, Lemaya, la'olam lemaya kasagin. Of course, he's bowing to the water. V'hachi kami ba'ile, lemaya the kamei kasagid, the kamai kamami azdu. Is he bowing to the water that is in front of him right now? That particular water, and by the time you get to the shaylev, can you bring it from the nesachim? That water is long gone. Oh, dilma lidabrunda demaya kasagid. The word is a highly unusual word. Rashi, the word dabruna. The word divar in Aramaic means to lead, right? Rashi, I think, quotes at the end of in Parshas Vayelech, I think, when Moshe, I think, tells Yoshua, tavo ima amazer, or something like that, and meaning you should lead along with the Zakenim, and God tells him Tavi Esa Amazer, or something like that, or Tavo Esa Amazer. So God says to Yeshua, no, don't listen to him. Dabar Echad Ladar V'ein Shnei Dabar Ladar. You can only have one leader. You can't have two leaders. It doesn't work. So that's what normally means, somebody that leads along. The word, by the way, Midbar, when it says by Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayin Hages Hatzon Achar HaMidbar, it's a bilingual pun. Right, vayinhag, nahag is the Hebrew word to lead, achar hamidbar. Midbar would almost seem to mean a place where you lead the sheep, to graze them. So anyway, but there's certainly, I'm sure there's a bilingual pun entailed in that word. So that dabruna means something to lead, to draw along or something like that. So Rashi says, dabruna lenahar is the kiluach shel nar fechilucho, the flow of the water. In other words,
power.
He's not worshipping, what's that?
It's like the power of the water.
I guess, but it means the whole stream of the water, not just this particular thing in front of him. So, oh, dilma l'dabruna d'maya kasagid. So then the Gemara says, but hold on one second. Umi mitzri. Is it really? Because let's assume for the moment he's bowing not to this water, but to the dabruna, to all the water, to the entire flow. Mi mitzri, v'ha'amar Rabbi Yochanan mishimur mishimun ben yotzadak, mayim shel rabim ein nesarim. So he says that mayim shel rabim are not nesarim. I think it's true also, if I'm mishtachaveh, to your behema, the behema is not asur lagavoa, because ain't on the mosad davar shein shlo. If I bow to my behema, it's asur lagavoa. To your behema, I don't have the power, I don't have the legal standing to make that asur b'hana. So these mayim, presumably the havamim, the gemara, is that the water is just flowing and keeps flowing, and it flows out of the spring, and why is that your water? In other words, it's mayim shel rabim. So why are you able to make it asur? So the gemara says lo tzricha de kanav e. Me'ara, the word nave, novea, it's flowing from his land, and it may even be, certain the way certain Rishonim present it, the way Tosus says at the bottom, that it actually never leaves his field. In other words, it pools only in his field of spring. It doesn't flow beyond it. I think if it Tosus is assuming that if we're to flow beyond his field, then by definition it's public property. But if it's the spring, there's not enough water that it flows out of the field, then that all that water actually belongs to him. It's not Shalrabim, so if he worships it, so then there is an issue of Nevad. The only question is, did he worship specific water, or did he which eventually gets absorbed, goes somewhere, or did he worship all of the water? And that's what the Gemara leaves the question, doesn't actually answer.
Is what, Kior, the water in the Kior.
Yeah.
Could you use this water for that, if you say it's Nevad?
Can you use the water in the Kior?
Yeah. What in the Kior?
So I think that would be the question. Could you use that water? Oh, so the Kior would be, it would be the same question, except for it would be Tashmishei Karban. So it'd be one step down. In other words, even if you assume that he's Meshtachave Ledabruna Denara, and you're assuming that Yesh Neva Mechubar, you also have to assume that Yesh Neva Mechubar with respect to Tashmishei Karban, because the Mayim and the Kior are not actually not a part of a Karban, they're just Machshirei Karban.
Unless they use it for Nisach
Mayim. No, you can't use, I mean, they certainly didn't use that for Nisach Mayim. Whether you could use the Mekir for Nisach Mayim, I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, the Mekir are Nifsal and Belina. The Mishnah describes a system they had that used to lower the water down into the ground to attach it to. So could that be treated as spring water the same way? I don't remember. But that's certainly not where they drew it from. Okay, fine. So that's the end of the of Elohim, Elaharim, Elaharim, Elohim, all the questions of Mechubar, and everything that goes along with that. Now the Mishnayos are going to turn their attention to, I don't want to say more practical matters, although this one is a little bit practical for us, which is the status of houses, rock platforms, and asherahs, when there are certain, well, under what circumstances there are aser b'hanah. Now, the Mishnah is going to speak about three kinds of, it's actually the next Mishnah, we'll talk about three kinds of batim. And when they're aser b'hanah. But the common denominator to everything that's really going on here really starts with an assumption that they are actually worshipping the bias. Now Rashi claims that they're worshipping the bias because they put an avodah zarah in it, and once they're worshipping that, they worship the bias as well. Now that's important to consider because in the context of this day and age, when you talk about, let's say, a church, they don't worship the building. Right? The building houses the avodah zarah. Right? It houses whatever their relationship might be exactly to the crucifix, and whether they actually obeyed that in its exact status, they certainly perform avoda lavodazara in the bias, because they when they do the Eucharist, so that is certainly, as we said last week, that is certainly tikrovas avodazara. So the bias is a makom in which they are worshiping avodazara in some way, form, fashion. Aaron,
don't they consecrate?
Ah, so the question is, what is the status of the building? So I finally have gotten my straight, clear answer in the Rishonim, which is, it's called Tashmishei Avodah Zarah. With Nafkamin, is that potentially emerged from that? It's not Avodah Zarah itself, but the building, as long as it's used for the Avodah Zarah, is Tashmishei Avodah Zarah. The next Mishnah, not the one we're on now, the next Mishnah is going to say that if one of the three kinds of Batim, once they remove the Avodah Zarah, so, and the house itself was never worshipped. They were only, in other words, the first two cases involve some type of worship of the house. The third case is Bayis Shechniso Avodah Zarah. Once they take it out, it's mutar again. Right, so that's certainly relevant to a question we have discussed before, which is, I mentioned before, is the question of the cloisters. Right, the cloisters has a chapel, a church, or whatever, a sanctuary in it. As far as I know, it's not an active use. It was taken from monasteries in Europe, parts and pieces from here and there. So that, I think, very clearly constitutes, firstly, that Avodah Zarah is no longer in there. That constitutes a bittul of Tashmishei Avodah Zarah. And I'll presume that while it probably, I wouldn't be surprised if a substantial amount of the money for the project came from Jews, it's a wing of the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Nonetheless, I assume Goyim were the ones who were removing the stones, and therefore the workers were probably non-Jews, and therefore their act certainly minimally constituted a bittul of Avodah Zarah if it was even necessary. It was necessary, yes.
With regards to these churches and so on, let's say Bethlehem, the churches were built much later. So the churches represent the land, the location of where supposedly the Jesus or the Avodah Zarah occurred.
Nisim occurred.
whatever it is, yeah. So it's really an extension of the territory, the land. I don't know how that.
No, but I would say the following. Just because they build a monument, they believe that Jesus performed a miracle in this particular place, and they build a monument around it, that's not Avodah Zarah. The issue is if they worship in the church, that's when the bias itself, which they're not worshiping the bias, that's when the bias becomes Tashmish Avodah Zarah. Right? They have chosen that place presumably because it has some historical association. But once they make a church out of it, so the Avodah Zarah takes place inside, the building itself is Tashmish Avodah. It's not Avodah Zarah, it's Tashmish Avodah Zarah. Right. What's that? You're going to start me thinking. I'm going to think about the rest of the day. What's the status? Depends. Who has the koach to be Nesar? You know, there are those. They have Avodah Zarah, and there are those who are just, you know, Maminim in the Mashiach. So the question is, you know, who has the koach to be Oser? Is it Shel Rabim and so on? Okay, fine. All right. So anyway, so that is something to keep in mind. But when you read the Mishnayos, you have to realize when they say Mishaya Beso Samoch Lavodas Kochavim. Now the next Mishnah, Vinafal. Right. So your house is adjoining literally to the base of Avodah Zarah, and it turns out actually one of your walls is a common wall, and now it falls down. So until now there was nothing you could do. Let's say you had a common wall with the building next door. Your neighbor next door sold his house to Avodah Zarah, and they chose to worship the house. So they can't aser your wall, your half of the wall, because ain't other most of davar shein shelo. But now the house has fallen down, you want to rebuild it. Now if you rebuild that wall and you let them use it, then already you become responsible in some way. Now Rashi says immediately, Mishahaya Koslo Samuch Lavodas Kochavim, the first Rashi in the Mishnah. Shahaya Echad mi Kosle Avodas Kochavim. In other words, it was his koslo, which was also one of the kosalim of the Avodah Zarah house, and the habayis atzmo nevad. In other words, it's not stama church. It means they actually worship the bayis itself. So the Mishnah says, also livnoso, you can't rebuild it. Rashi says, shabona kosal avodas kochavim. So what do you do? Ketzed yaseh, kones beso shalo arba amos. You move arba amos into your part of the land that you own. Ubone, and you build there. And this way they can't, in other words, they're not going to be able to use your thing. Now they have to build their own wall. Shelo v'shel avodas kochavim. I'm sorry, that's that case. So I think the first case is it's where it's actually. So I think the first case has to be. It's very strange because I think the first case also has to be some type of a joint wall. But now Rashi says the Mishnah is talking about the makom where the wall is. Shelo v'shel avodas kochavim. If the wall, meaning the makom, was, if it actually belonged to both of them. Let's say it's not just that the church used your wall. Let's say the church, that wall was actually divided between the two. Nidon mechza al mechza. Half the land belongs to you. That's part of your arba amos that you marchik. Half the land is assumed to belong to the base of Avodah Zarah. Avonav Eitzav Afaro Mitamin Kasheretz. The stones and the wood and the dirt that was used to build the wall that collapsed are Mitamin Kasheretz. They convey Tuma through contact. And it's assumed that they're Asr B'hana. The reason that all of it's Asr B'hana is because you don't know which is your half and which is his half. If it were clear somehow, which let's say that it's clear from the wall, it was a joint wall, but you could tell which parts came from your side of the wall, that would be Mutar B'hana, and it wouldn't be Mitame. But because you don't know, all the materials from that middle wall are Asr B'hana, and the Mishnah is assuming that Avodah Zarah is Mitamin Kasheretz. I'm pretty sure this Tuma is only Midrabbana. What? It is, but the assumption.
The wall and the stones on one side are in the church. And the stones
so, if you could identify which stones are your stones, they would be mutter. And that's your half the wall.
The stones are the same ones, only ones are facing one way.
So if it's a solid stone, then it's a problem. But sometimes a wall was thick enough that you had. And as you imagine, it's not. They're thick walls. So imagine you have two bricks, like one next to one, okay. You know, two rows of bricks in effect.
That would be two separate walls.
Well, but no, but it's actually plastered together and glued together and so on.
So it wasn't originally built as a makom
of the Zara. So if you can, no, the Obey HaKosel is divided in half, we assume, when it comes to Chalukah. It's true here, but not only here, it's true in general. Shutfim will have something. If they, in other words, if it's a thick.
Built that way.
What's that?
Did they actually build that way, or did they.
I think that when they had, you had thick enough walls, yeah, the answer is yes. I think it's clear from Mishnayos and Bava Metzia, when it's, I think, the last parak of Bava Metzia, that if you had a joint kosel and it fell, you'd divide up the stuff, But if he's makir some of his own avonim, the Mishnah says, then he takes those and the other guys notel kenegdo before they divide up the rest. So the assumption is there are times that you have, and again, that's not avodah zarah. There's no iser question there. Sometimes there's when you have a thick wall, and their walls tended to be much thicker than our walls. That's how you would technically be divisible. It should be divided in that way. But if you can't tell, so by Dina Mamanos, who cares? You just come up with Chalukah. Here, you're dealing with Isser Beheter, so anything that had been part of the base of Avodah Zarah is going to be Aser Banot. So the Tana Kama says it's Metame Kesheret, Shenemar Shaketz Tishaketzenu, Visaev Tisavenu Kicherimhu. The Torah says in Parshas Ekev, Velo Saviso Evil Besacha, it's referring right after it talks about Avodah Zarah and getting rid of it. So sheketz just means something disgusting, but it's used frequently in the parsha of Machalas Asuras. V'sheketz yilachem mibisaram lo sochelu v'nivlasam lo sigau. So therefore, they assume that it's tuma sheretz. If you touch a sheretz, you're tame. Carry a sheretz without touching, actually coming direct contact, you're not tame. Be in an ohel on the same roof of sheretz, you're not tame. Rabbi Akiva Omer, no, kenida, it's metame even b'masa. Shenemar, tizreim kimo dava, sei tomar lo. Ma nida mitama b'masa, af avodas kochavim mitama b'masa. So the pasuk in Yeshaya is talking about the avodah zarah getting rid of it. Tizreim kimo dava. Dava means literally something which is some sick, but the word dava is used in a number of, sometimes it's used just in general with sickness, but sometimes it's used in the context of an isha nida for obvious reasons. In Parshas Tazriah we read v'tama shivas yamim kimei nidas divosa titma. That's the same word. Madvei. So tizrein kimo dava, scatter like something which is a sickness. But here they take it as a nida. A nida is mitama b'masa, either if you touch her, or if she touches something, or something that carries her, the bed which supports her weight. And therefore, avodah zarah is mitame, according to Rabbi Akiva, both through touching it and through carrying it, even though you're not actually touching it. There is a shita somewhere, I think in Shabbos, I think it's for Yehuda Ben Bava, Yehuda Misera, who says that, I think he says that avodah zarah is mitame ba'ohel. Actually, because it's called like a mace, like vayochlu zivchei mesim. I believe that all these tumas are midrabanan. It's all asmach. The midaray said there's no actual tumah with respect to avodah zarah, but the chachamim would go there tumah on avodah zarah. Okay, so now the gemara asks a question: how can you leave the open space there? V'hakamarvach l'avodas kochavim. You are in effect giving benefit to avodah zarah. Now, the gemara that Rashi doesn't explain. He doesn't explain, but it sounds like the question is: you're leaving all that open space, and the guy and the base of the Zara, they rebuild. They're going to take advantage of using your space, in which case you're giving them more space for their base of the Zara. So Amar Rav Chanina Misura the Avad Le Beis Hakiseh. You make it into a latrine. That's what you do. That's what you use it for. And at which point they're going to keep their wall to themselves. So the Gemara says, ah. But for Habayit's Niusa, how can you do it? It's like right next to there. It's like, it's all open. So the Gemara says, the Avad Le Beis Hakiseh Delayla. You use it as the night latrine. So the Gemara says, ah, but for Amar Mar Ezo Tzanua. Who is considered a person who's Tzanua? Hanifne Balayla Bimakom Shenifne Bayom. Now, they say that someone who's a real Tzanua is a Tzanua even when other people aren't looking. Right? In other words, he still covers him or herself. Right, so the Gemara says, "Va'afal gavdu kimna b'chiderech." In other words, the way you uncover yourself, but also so even though you want to say that it doesn't refer to the specific, it doesn't mean you have to use the bath. Remember, they used outhouses. So you left your house, you went to some place in the field, hopefully behind the wall, you dug a hole, and sometimes you had a permanent hole there, and that's what you used. So when we say hanifna, originally malayla b'makom shenifna bayom, it sounds like you have to use the same place. Now people didn't want to do that because during the day you had to go farther out in the middle of nowhere, which was perceived as being dangerous at night. So even though we say it doesn't mean you have to go, you can have a night bathroom and a day bathroom. One is closer to home, so you don't have to walk so far in the dark, and one is further away. Nonetheless, still, it has to be in some ways, you still should be covered in such a way. You should. It's going to be open. How can you do that? So the Gemara says, the Aved Leila Tinokos. In other words, it's for children. I don't know how little they are, but up to a certain age, they don't have a sense of it, so they just go anywhere, and that's fine, and that's what you use it for. So you basically make the place not suitable, where they're not going to want to use it, and therefore I don't know. Again, the Rishonim don't explain here what is the hana the guy is getting. Is it that you build another wall and he doesn't bother to build up the wall and he just has more space on the ground? But if you put junk there or whatever else, he's going to have to build his own wall. He certainly can't use the space. That's what it sounds like. So the Gemara gives a second possibility, which is inami the godir lay behisbe vehinge. He basically makes a fence of thorns there. In other words, he basically sets up a property line and says, this is my property. And he makes it something where you really don't want to bump up against it. And I guess the end result is they're probably going to have to build their own wall. They're not going to be able to rely upon his wall and his house, because they certainly can't use the space that's there. All right, so the sugi here is obviously assuming, and everybody accepts this, that you're not allowed to be mahaneh lavo dezara. You're not allowed to let them be neneh from your property if you have, of course, a choice. Okay.
That's just for the actual worship of the wall, not if it's in
Tashmishi Avodah Zarah. So they don't, in other words, what would it then be by Tashmishi Avodah Zarah? I don't know. In other words, maybe that's not called, it's not clear. In other words, the real question is, it still might be considered Mahana Avodah Zarah, right? Because the whole purpose of the bias is for the benefit and effect of the Avodah Zarah inside. So to the extent that you're Mahana them, that space probably is being Mahana Avodah Zarah. Even if the object itself is not Avodah Zarah, but Tashmishi Avodah Zarah, because it's really the utilization inside. All right, now let's just read quickly the first Mishnah of the sequence. Now we're going to get Shalosh Batim, Shalosh Avanim, and Shalosh Asheros. So what are the Shalosh Batim Haim? Rashi writes, L'inyan bitol avodas kochavim. Right? It doesn't mean there are many, many different kinds of houses. That's not, it doesn't mean only three kinds. With three houses with respect to the status of how you mavata the avodah zarah. Bayis shebina'o mitchila avodas kochavim, hareze asar. If the house was built to be worshipped, so then that's usur immediately. It's usur immediately. And until a guy comes along and is explicitly mevatel, it remains usur. Then, siyado v'chiro lavodas kochavim, if it wasn't built in order to be worshipped, but now it's been built already, and they decide they want to worship it, and what they do is they put decorations. The literal meaning of siyed v'chir means he takes plaster, and it seems he draws, it plasters the walls and puts, images of, I don't know, whatever he puts on there. So then, no tel masha chidesh. If even the Jew can come along, now a Jew cannot be mevatel avodah zarah. That's we're going to learn that, God willing, in the next season, in the next perek. The conclusion of Mishnah Achrona is a Jew does not have the capacity to mevatel avodah zarah. Only a goy can be mevatel avodah zarah shel goy. Nobody can mevatel avodah zarah shel Yisrael once a Jew worshipped it, and Yisrael cannot be mevatel any avodah zarah. So if the goy comes along and is either mevatel the siyud v'chiyur, or if a Jew just comes and he strips it off the walls, so then it's going to be mutar b'hano. So that's what the Mishnah says, that siyud v'chiyur levatz kochavim v'chidesh no tamasha chidesh. And finally, hichnis letocha avodas kochavim. If you brought avodah zarah in there, but as Rashi says, v'sabayis atzma, the last Rashi in the Mishnah, lo niskavein lavod, v'lo ikso letashmish avodas kochavim elo lefisha, hichnis letocha avodas kochavim. Rashi says it was only meant to be temporary. Then, once it's taken out, even if the Jew takes out, hareze mutter. Now Rashi does imply the following. If just because the avodah zarah itself was taken out does not mean under all cases it's going to be mutter automatically. If the house were dedicated to be used for this purpose, not to worship the house, then it sounds, according to Rashi, that even if the guy took the avodah zarah out, it would still require bittul in order to do away with the tashmishi avodah zarah status. But if it was only used, Rashi says, lefisha'a, the guy brought it in, and now he takes it out. So then, once again, it becomes motar bana. You don't need to do anything else. That's what the Gemara says. Now, so these are the three houses. The house that was built to be worshipped. The house that wasn't built to be worshipped, but it was renovated. Let's put it that way. And for the intent of worship. And then finally, a house that was just a house for Avodah Zarah, but the house itself wasn't worship. The first one is usher immediately when it's built. The second one is only usher until you remove the renovations. If you restore it to its original state, it's mutter. And then, the last case, as soon as they take the Avodah Zarah, it's mutter. Now, here's a very important question. When they built the house L'Shem Avodah Zarah, or they renovate L'Shem Avodah Zarah, did they actually worship it? Did they actually worship it? Why do I ask the question? Because the Mishnah sounds like if they were Messiah or Mechayer, they renovated the bias, and now you strip away the renovations, it's okay. But if the Goy actually worshipped the bias at that point, with the renovations at the top of it, what should the status of the bias be? It should become Aser, because it has Tfisas Yad HaAdam, so it would seem, right? In other words, it's what we call Tala Shulibso Chibra. This is not a tree that took root in the ground. This is not stones that were there Mishesheshim Ebracious. This is, you took stones, you attached it to the ground, but you built something. That would seem to be very clear Tfisas Yad HaAdam. And unlike in a case where you planted a tree, even if you planted the tree, the way Tosus explains to Chaman, that once it takes root, it's now part of the ground again. People have no Tfisa on it. A bias doesn't take root. It might be hard to pick up, but it's still not actually part of the ground in that sense. Amar Rav, the Gemara says, Hamishtachave le bias asaro. If you bow to the bias, it's asar, which means it must refer to the second case. The first case, probably in the first case, it doesn't matter. You build the L'Shem Avodah Zarah, it's asar bano. So, Alma kasavar talosh lebesop chibro ketalosh dami. Rav holds that if you bow to the house, that if something that was detached from the ground, and now in the end you reattach it, it's treated as something that is detached from the ground. And if that's the case, it becomes Aser Bana. So the Mishnah says, V'ha'anan tanan bina otanan. Our Mishnah says that merely building the house itself makes it Aser. So how can Rav make the claim that he does? Rav says that if you worship it, it becomes Aser. It implies if you just built it, it won't be Aser. So the Gemara says no. What it means is the following. In other words, really, if you build the house, L'Shem Avodah Zarah, it's Aser Bahana, immediately without worshiping it. If you built the house, not L'Shem Avodah Zarah, but you haven't added anything to it, and you worship it, it's also Aser Bahana. If you build a house, and then you renovate it, L'Shem Avodah Zarah, but you didn't build it for those purposes, that's the second case in the Mishnah. If you haven't worshipped it yet, you just remove the renovations. And then the last case in the Mishnah would be you bring Avodah Zarah into the house. Now, the only problem with this, of course, is how many batim do we have? Four. The one that you built L'Shem Avodah Zarah, the one that you built not L'Shem Avodah Zarah, but you worshipped it, the one that you didn't build L'Shem Avodah Zarah, but you renovate L'Shem Avodah Zarah, and I'll assume you didn't worship it, and then the house that you built to put Avodah Zarah in, even though you don't intend to worship the house. So the Gemara says immediately, Ihachi, Shlosha, Arba'avu, it's four. So the Gemara says, Kaman de l'inyan bitul, Tnan, Bona vishtachava chad kachashavle. Since the whole purpose of the Mishnah, this is the first comment I made quoting Rashi, is it's three batim with respect to bittul, three ways of being mevatel. So the way you're mevatel a bias, that either you built the shem of the zara or you didn't, but you worshipped it, is the same way. The guy has to declare it batel. So therefore, those two have the same mode of bittul. Bittul mode number one is you need the guy to actually explicitly be mevatel it. Mode number two is you remove the renovations. Mode number three is you take the avodah zarah out. So that's why the Gemara only lists the Mishnah only counts them as three. One important point that should just be noted, I'll conclude with this, is that Rav's position is that if a goy makes avodah zarah, it is usher immediately bahana, even though it hasn't been worshipped yet, right? In other words, the bias, I'll grant you, talush l'basof chibro is called talush, right? This has tfisas yara adam, and therefore you can make a bias usher even though it's attached to the ground. But if you haven't worshipped it, forget that it's attached to the ground. You haven't worshipped it yet. But the question is, if you make something L'Shem Avodah Zarah, it's going to come up, I think it's in the next paragraph, when a Jew or a guy, and we've touched upon it before, makes something for Avodah Zarah, but hasn't actually worshipped it yet, when does it become Aser Bahana? Okay. Any questions?
I assume that the third, today we have like chapels.
Right.
Where... burn put up by Buddhas, what we
would call a... We'd call a Beis HaBodhisattva.
It's taken in and out, so it seemed like it would be the third category.
Except that if it was built for the purposes of being permanently being a Beis HaBodhisattva, just because they take it out, according to that Rashi, doesn't change its status. It would still, once it's built to house the Avodah Zarah on a permanent basis, then it would probably revert. It would have to be, when the Goy takes it out, he takes it out permanently, and maybe requires Bittul on the Tashmish Avodah Zarah.
Yeah, rotating travels, where Shabbos is used, Jews, and the Goy is used on Sunday.
Right, so I think if that's the way, forgetting about the propriety of doing so, but let's say cases are similar. Let's say you have a non-denominational chapel in an airport, in a hospital, something like that. So there, I think I'm not sure even if you technically would require to remove, let's say, the crucifix. You probably want to cover it, at least for Marasayan reasons, but it might be that that bias was never miyuchad at all for Avodah Zarah, even Lefi. In other words, it might be that Lefi Shah is when Christians are using it, and when Jews are using it, it's by definition, I would say the following. The people who own that chat, that own that space, so they designate it for certain purposes at certain times and other purposes at other times. The fact that an Ovid of Avodah Zarah worships in it part of the time, and other so only during the time that he worshipped it that he was supposed to, would that be considered Aser?
Yeah. Very off topic. Somebody was telling me how their son graduated Fordham Law School this week, mm-hmm. and on the gowns they have crosses. What is he supposed to do?
I don't even know as a halachic matter, it strikes me that no Jew should wear a gown with a cross on it.
You covered it, but I'm just asking what the hell of
it. You know, the question is, what is it? The gown is not Aser Bahana, you know, but it, you know, what is it? He's, just because he wears it doesn't mean that he's not, I don't think he's professing, he's wearing a gown, because that's the way Fordham is, a Catholic university makes their gown. But there's something that's really posthumous about a Jew wearing such a gown. So I don't know. Is it technically Aser? I don't know, but it's not right.